Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Guatemala, a Central American country that borders Mexico, was most recently in the news for finding a former president guilty of genocide.
By unanimous decision, the court declares that the accused José Efraín Ríos Montt is responsible as the author of the crime of genocide.
Even though the trial was restarted on a technicality, this is all part of the country's effort to overcome the effects of a devastating civil war that lasted 30 years. The conflict, which started in the 50s, was fought between leftist guerrillas and the army. The UN estimates that 25,000 people died, but other organizations say it could be as high as 40,000.
During a 36-year civil war, 45,000 students, political activists, and peasants were disappeared, and 200,000 Mayan Indians were killed in the countryside.
Naty Garcia is the daughter of a Guatemalan couple who fled the war. They arrived in Vancouver when she was 3 years old. Now 30, Naty is 5'5", dark-skinned, she's got brown eyes and a quick smile. Despite arriving at a very young age, Naty usually wears traditional Mayan clothing and identifies with the culture her family left behind. Naty's parents are Mayan, a group of indigenous people who live in Central America and parts of Mexico. They were heavily targeted by the military during the war. Like thousands of other Guatemalan refugees, Naty's family was forced to flee when their hometown became a battleground. According to Naty, when they arrived in Vancouver in the late 1980s, they didn't have many things to call their own.
We lived in a one or two bedroom place, our first home, and it was about five of us. So we all shared this one mattress. So there was a lot of tension sometimes, and people wanted their own space, but didn't get that. But we'd all have to sleep on one mattress. And I remember that. And everything was very old in the household. Everything was secondhand. It was gifted. It was from donations. And I remember our clothes never really fit us well enough.
Vancouver is nothing like the place her parents grew up in. Her family is from a region called Ixcan in the Guatemalan jungle. Even though her family didn't have many material possessions, Fabiana Morales, Naty's mom, has fond memories of the village she grew up in. Given its climate and location, it was a perfect place to grow crops. So despite being a poor area, Fabiana says they were never hungry. Violence spilled into Ixcan when Fabiana was 18 years old. The leftist guerrilla had been operating in the region for a while, but the real problem started when the discovery of natural resources got the army interested in occupying those lands. The army was brutal in its mission to control Ixcan. They used the scorched earth strategy, destroying everything in their path and killing everyone who they considered a threat to their control over the region. Fabiana, who only speaks Spanish and Mayan mom, told us about when the army made its way into her village.
The next day we saw it with our own eyes. We saw smoke. They were already burning the houses. They were burning everything in their way. So we left.
Fabiana and her family fled to the mountains. The lush vegetation provided many hiding spots, but the army was tirelessly tracking them down.
The army realized that some people were still alive. They started shooting everything that moved. We heard the shots being fired, and that was the day we decided we couldn't hide there anymore.
Ill-equipped for the journey through the treacherous Guatemalan jungle, Some decided to stay behind.
My father said, "You go. I will stay here to die because I don't have little ones." So he stayed. He said, "I'm going to find a little corner here in the mountain." My parents lived on that mountain for 12 years.
Fabiana and her family spent 8 years as refugees in Mexico. When they arrived in Canada, other Guatemalan refugees became the only connection to the land they had left behind. Before we continue, we want to warn listeners that the next section contains a testimony that some people could find disturbing.
When I was 8 and 9 years old, we went to a friend's place in Surrey. We were really good friends with them at that time. My parents were good friends with them at that time. It was a celebration, a party. So we went to this person's place to be in that space again. And we had ended up staying that night at that friend's place because my parents weren't sober enough to go back home. And all the kids that were there with her had ended up being put in a room where we'd sleep all together, and we'd slept there a few times in the past, but this one night in particular, when I was really young, there was this one person that came in to that room when I was asleep, and I remember waking up feeling that it was a dream and it was really dark, and this young person had kind of woken me up by pressing his arms onto my body, and I remember opening my eyes and seeing this person looking at me, and I remember having this feeling of fear, this feeling of pain, this feeling of what is happening, and then this person had ended up doing these sexual kind of actions that I wasn't familiar with at that age. And I actually ended up closing my eyes really tightly and hoping that it would go away. And then ended up waking up my eyes, opening my eyes again. And it was daylight and all the kids were awake. Somebody was making breakfast downstairs in the kitchen. And I remember thinking to myself that maybe it was a bad dream. Maybe it was something that I always felt that it was a bad dream.
Even though the experience had left her deeply disturbed, Nati decided not to tell anyone what had happened to her.
I didn't tell anybody because I felt I didn't understand it. I wasn't sure. I would never had that conversation with my parents about respecting your body, about if you ever feel anyone that does any harm to you in any way, or if you feel scared in any way, any moment, to let us know. I hadn't had those conversations with my parents or had built that trust enough with my parents.
That wasn't the only topic they didn't discuss, though. Nati's parents had never told their children about the hardships they faced during their exile. Nati's questions were always met with evasives or silence. When Fabiana arrived in Canada, the country felt like a totally foreign place to her. She didn't know anyone, so she stayed home a lot. Unable to grow her own food, Fabiana felt she couldn't connect to this new land. And without any professional help, she and her husband were having issues coping with their past.
My husband used to have a lot of problems. He was maybe 20 or 25 years old when the war started, and that kind of affected him. He used to feel a little bit of rage, and that made him start drinking. Sometimes at the house, he would be drunk, and all that rage he had, he would take it out on us. He would take it out on the family. Sometimes he would hurt the family, so the children started being afraid of him.
My parents' relationship was, I feel, was full of a lot of tensions. I remember listening and witnessing to some of the arguments that they would have and not understanding where it came from, but only feeling the emotions that came from it.
All the tension, sadness, and silence drew Nati away from home. Feeling disconnected to her own family, she befriended other teenagers from troubled homes. At age 12, she became sexually active, and then she started drinking and doing drugs. Her parents didn't know what she was up to. She barely spoke to them.
My relationship with my parents during my childhood was, there was a lot of anger. I did not communicate with them at all about anything. I hated them. Like, I just, especially my dad, I hated my dad. I felt that he had brought all of this pain to me. I felt it was because of his alcoholism. It was because of the violence that he brought into the household that it drove me to where I was as a teenager. And my mom, I hated my mom because I felt that she wasn't there for me.
Nati still hadn't come to terms with what had happened to her as a child. She frequently had a disturbing dream about a shadow sexually forcing itself into her. But she hadn't considered the possibility that the dreams were based on reality. Everything changed one day when she ran into a familiar figure while picking blueberries with her mom.
I remember in a far distance seeing this figure of a man talking to my mom and I guess talking to the other family members there. And I remember just this feeling of fear just entering my body. I just became paralyzed. That paralyzation, similar to what had happened during that incident, I felt that again. And I was triggered by this figure and did not know what it was. And it wasn't until later, and I had like run into like the blueberry bushes and I had just hid there. I just stayed there. I didn't want to come out. And not until later on in the evening when that person had left and we had gone back home, I started to ponder on that question as to why I had felt that way. And I came to realize that this feeling really was connected to the dream that I had. And I didn't know fully then, but it was a start into opening that wound of understanding that this was not a dream. What had happened was real.
After realizing that she had been a victim of sexual assault, she confided it to her best friend, who encouraged her to deal with it. It was the first time Nati said what had happened to her out loud.
I cried a lot. It was the first time I had cried in front of anybody, and it was with her because I trusted her. She was the first person I really, really trusted, so she held that space for me to share my childhood.
Finally, being able to talk to someone about the experience proved helpful. But Nati still hadn't dealt with many of the underlying issues. She spent the next 10 years taking refuge in alcohol, drugs, and destructive relationships. By then, her parents had found a way to sober up by reconnecting with their indigenous roots. But Nati was convinced this strategy wouldn't work for her. Looking for a fresh start, she and her best friend moved to Montreal. But the new setting didn't change Nati's old habits. She continued to abuse drugs and alcohol. Her behavior eventually led to a fight with her friend. The fallout made Nati realize she had to fully confront what had happened to her as a child. So she went back home to tell her parents about it.
That conversation was very hard. It was one of the most challenging conversations I have had with my family. I remember all of us sitting kind of like a circle. And I remember nobody had any idea why they were there, why this was being initiated by me. I told them that I hadn't told them because I didn't trust them. I didn't feel they would understand her. It was more of trust. I just didn't trust them, and I told them that. I had still hated them and had resentment towards them, so it was hard for me to share anything with them. So this was one of the first moments where I really shared something vulnerable to my parents.
Listening to Nati, Fabiana realized that keeping her children in the dark had created trust issues, so she decided to open up to them. After After walking in the jungle for 8 days, Fabiana and her family finally made it to Mexico. But they soon realized they weren't alone. Thousands of people had fled to the neighboring country, where a makeshift refugee camp had been established near the border.
The United Nations had already arrived to help, but since we were thousands of people, we only got one or two tortillas a day. And that's not enough for a person. It's not enough to sustain a body. We didn't have any clothes. We didn't have cooking utensils. We had nothing. We went out looking for scraps, for anything we could use to boil some water. And that's when people started getting sick. One of my children died because he was struck by sickness.
The family was then sent to another refugee camp in the Mexican state of Campeche. They lived there for the next 8 years. It was here where Nati was born. The conditions were similar to the ones they had faced in the border.
The place they sent us to was dry. The water, well, they would only give us a liter per person per day. And that's not enough. The food was the same. It was rationed. So I would give my children all of it. Even if I didn't eat anything.
Para ellos, aunque yo no comía nada.
Slowly, Fabiana lost hope. She started thinking that the family would have to stay in Campeche forever. But one day, out of the blue, they received a letter from Fabiana's brother-in-law. He had emigrated to Canada before the family fled to Mexico. He initially thought they had died during the conflict, but after discovering his family members were alive, he helped them resettle in Vancouver. It was then that Fabiana and her husband decided they would never discuss the details of their exile with their children.
I think that if my parents had been a bit more open to their own experience, it would have been a more safer space for me to be able to share my experience. Because I would have known that, wow, you've gone through so much. You can relate to my pain.
Nati's confession motivated her parents to finally share their experiences during the war. Understanding all the violence and trauma they endured for almost a decade has allowed her to put away her negative feelings towards them. She now embraces them for who they are. But Nati's commitment to break the silence goes well beyond her household. Now she's a social worker.
I'm very focused with youth and children because I realize the importance of the innocence, the importance of providing that nurturing space and empowering them as beautiful beings to see their true power and allow themselves to creatively explore it and connect with it.
Nati's family is still healing, but coping with decades of silence takes time and the help of every family member. Nati's parents don't drink anymore. The family has also found a place where they can grow traditional Guatemalan crops. Joining her parents at the farm has helped Nati reconnect with her indigenous roots. All of this makes Nati have high hopes for the future.
I'm still healing, so I see myself being a bit more liberated and free and working with a community, my community back home in Guatemala. And I see my family full of lots of love and joy, and I see them stronger. I see the roots of our household to be more grounded.
This documentary was produced by Carlos Tello and Aurora Tejeda with the support and assistance of CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia, and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. We would like to thank Nati and Fabiana for sharing their stories with us.
This is Bird Note. Broad-tailed hummingbirds are small but hardy creatures built for life in the mountains. They survive freezing cold nights by slowing their heart rate and metabolism. They snatch insects in midair and chase other hummingbirds out of their territories. And they perform a death-defying stunt for potential mates. Male broad-tailed hummingbirds begin their performance by flying up 60 feet or more in the air. Then they dive toward the earth, reaching speeds of up to 50 miles per hour. At the last moment, they pull out of their dive
and fly horizontally past the female they're trying to impress. Their tail feathers make a buzzing noise, and the iridescent feathers on their throats appear to change from bright magenta to jet black as they fly past. Then they fly right back up for another dive. Scientists showed that broad-tailed hummingbirds time their dives just right so that all of the effects, the tail buzz, the high speed, and the color change in their throat feathers, all happen in the same 300 millisecond window as they zoom past the female. Now that is some fancy flying. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. Did you know you can listen to Bird Note in your podcast app? Subscribe to Bird Note Daily and never miss an episode.
We're back with another edition of Gardening with Embark with Pablo Vimes, Gardening Manager for Embark Sustainability Society.
Hi, good morning. Glad to be here.
Good morning. We're in week 34.
Correct. Ooh, we went fast.
The year is rushing along, and so is the summer. We're actually really close to the end of, well, you know, the BC summer. Obviously, summer technically goes to around the 21st of September, but, yep, you know, for the way it feels around here, it kind of ends with in the next week or so.
Yes, yeah. So for us gardeners in Metro Vancouver, yeah, summer is over, and we are in the transition for the gardening in fall. Yeah, so at the moment we are very busy finishing harvesting any flowers that mm-hmm. have seeds. For instance, the lavender need to be completely trimmed, all the flowers removed. Then we have the garlic chives. They have flower. They love to flower over the fall. And now they are making seeds as well, so we are harvesting that. This year in the gardens we planted tobacco, traditional tobacco, and all the pots, I will say, they are just opening up and seeds start to fall. So it's time to start collecting as well. Right. So we are very busy seed saving for the next season.
Great. When you save the seeds for next season, you're collecting them now.
Correct. Yeah.
You know, how do you keep them until it's time to start to germinate them?
So so we are collecting and letting them dry, air dry, in trays. And then we will pack them in a small paper envelopes.
Yeah.
And then we put in a container in the dark for the next season. Yeah. So the most important is to make sure that the seeds are completely dry out.
Right.
We don't want the moist seeds get packed and suddenly everything gets moldy and we lose the seeds.
Great. Well, another thing that happens with the end of summer for all of us around here on the campus is we start thinking about the new school year. Also very important for families and stuff as well. But that means you're gearing up for some of your programs here at Embark.
Correct. Yeah. So at the moment, campus is kind of quiet. And that gives us at Embark time to plan. So we've been planning for the next fall. So we will be hosting a fall gardening cohort opening to all students interested in students and staff interested mm-hmm. on developing gardening skills.
Yeah.
So we will be meeting here at the student union. We have the gardening over here, which is luckily undercover. That's one of the main things that gardening over during the fall is. It's going to be wet. It's going to be rainy. We need to be prepared to be outdoors. Yeah. So we are glad that we have undercover, and we will be meeting once a week between 12 and 1:30, and we will go in through activities like garden planning, planting styles, different planting styles, gardening care, at this moment will be nice. We will be about composting and what to do with the produce that we are harvesting. So, preservation.
Great. And how many students can you accept for that?
We have room for 10 people, mm-hmm. Since each one will get, each participant will get their own gardening plot.
Yeah.
And so with 10 people, we have a space for 10 people. Yeah. So if you are interested, join us. We are already promoting through our social media channels this as well. Mm-hmm. We, for October the 2nd, we are planning to have a workshop on making saves and leaf balms.
Yeah.
As well. So to be interested, again, this season we've been harvesting all calendula seeds, calendula flowers, all that will be is the putting oil to get the essences and make leaf balms and saves for the winter. So to
So it's great. So when students join your cohort, they get their own gardening plot. So they're going to be getting some produce from this.
Correct.
Yeah.
At the moment, I make sure that the gardening plot is full. So when they join, already is produce to harvest. Right. And then we go through all the mechanics, the process, how to grow your urban garden.
Yeah. Great. What about some of the other programs that Embark is doing?
The other programs we are going to start as well the second week of September. We continue with our food rescue.
Yeah.
So every Thursday between 1 o'clock and 3 o'clock, we have a food rescue, which is food, is edible food that cannot be anymore displaying the shelves of Nestor's Market supermarket, and we take those and we distribute for free here in the community. Sometimes we top it up with any excess produce from the gardens too,
right.
Because at the moment we have quite a bit of carrots in there waiting to everyone to return, and we can share with them.
Great. So as we're in week 34 and heading towards the end of the season, how much more produce are we going to be producing and harvesting before things fully finish up?
So our last week as a gardener is the week 44 at the end of October.
Yeah.
So we still have around 10 weeks.
What plants are we going to be seeing coming, still producing up through that period?
Yeah, so we will have the radishes 4 weeks, very quick. And then we have spinach and mesclums.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And at the moment, we have planted before summer the Brussels sprouts, which are nicely producing now, little Brussels sprouts.
Yeah.
So we will have that. And then we will put all the root crops like beets and carrots and turnips for overwintering, and garlic too, for overwintering. And for ready to harvest next spring.
So there's so much going on. I really understand why the programs like you're talking about, joining one of the cohorts, and you do, there's several of them throughout the growing season.
Yes.
You know, could really help a gardener really get a jump on how to do this. Because, you know, as we've been talking about it over this season, you know, it really is complex to have so many plants on the go and starting and finishing and harvesting and coming and going and looking after them.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot to manage.
Yes.
Even in a small garden.
Even in a small garden. And for instance, for the fall gardening, it's difficult to get seedlings.
Mm-hmm.
So I prefer to start with seedlings rather than from seeds, because it takes 4-6 weeks for a seed to germinate into a plant.
Yeah.
But I like to get with a seedling. So the nursery started way mid-July. So now we are mid-August and I'm already transplanting all these plants like pak choi, Brussels sprouts, broccoli, cabbages, Chinese cabbage. Everything is ready to go into the garden. So, the garden keeps moving.
Yep. Great. Well, thanks so much for all this today, Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability Society.
Glad to be here.
We'll be back again next week and... Tell us a bit how people can find out more about Embark and get involved with some of these programs.
Absolutely. You can reach Embark at embarksustainability.org or to our social media channels at Embark Sustain.
Great. Thank you so much.
Likewise. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
My name is Magnus Teeval. Joining me here is Peter R.H.
We're doing two pre-recorded things because... Magnus, you're giving me a holiday, and then after that, it's Labor Day, and the station is closed.
Exactly.
So the first one is Illuminati.
And the Illuminati.
I'm going to read Illuminati because it gets kind of mixed up. The Illuminati really only existed from 1776 to about the 1830s. Now, what it gets really mixed up with is, I guess, what you would call the high establishment, which I think exists. Like, the high establishment would be the Rockefeller Foundations, the Rock Church.